This is Taking Aim with
Rav Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you
Tuesday, July 19th, 2005. Our program today, the London bombings, inventing the scapegoats.
I want to make it absolutely clear that no one should be in any doubt that work last Thursday is that of the extremists and the criminals. Those are the words of Metropolitan Police Assistant Commissioner Andy Heyman. And then Metropolitan Police Commissioner Sir Ian Blair said that searches going on throughout England were carried out under the Anti-Terrorism Act. They were intelligence-led and directly connected to the attacks. These are the London bombing attacks on three trains, an explosion as the train was leaving Liverpool station, and then one when the train was between King's Cross and Russell Square stations, and a further explosion at Edgware Road station. The first explosion was at 8:52 a.m. London time. At first, the police were saying that this was the result of a power surge and that the explosions took place subsequent to each other. Later, they said the explosions took place simultaneously. And then an hour later, the number 30 bus at Upper Woburn Square, which had been diverted because of the original explosions, went off at 9:47. Who was responsible? Who was responsible for these? As the assistant commissioner had said, the police and MI5, MI6, Tony Blair, and all the people in the United States and in Great Britain were saying this was the work, no doubt about it, of extremists and criminals linked to Al-Qaeda. They gave the names of four young men: Hasib Hussein, 18 years old, Shehzad Tanweer, 22 years old, Mohammed Sadiq Khan, 30 years old, and Lindsay Germain, also in his 20s. These were the first three, Hasib, Shehzad, and Mohammed, were Pakistani, born in Great Britain. And Lindsay was a man of Jamaican birth who had converted to Islam. Ralph?
Well, Maya, for inventing the scapegoats is a bit transparent. Here is the Sunday Herald in Boston. They wanted to be known. Suicide bombers had IDs. How convenient. They carried around with them IDs along with their bombs. And as with 9/11, when the explosions tore bodies apart and disintegrated metal and crushed the cars, all of the IDs of these so-called suicide bombers are intact. Of course, as the London Mirror and Daily Sun would point out, why suicide? If you want to do a suicide operation, what you would do is choose a location which is impossible to access. Otherwise, there's no rationale for a suicide bomber. There is no difficulty in accessing the London Underground. Anybody, any passenger can access the London Underground and put a satchel under a seat. Furthermore, the authorities have maintained that these were all done with timing devices. You don't need timing devices if you're a suicide bomber. As you examine, as we look at, and as the British press itself looks at, the sequence of rationales advanced by the authorities, each is incompatible with the other. They wanted to be known. If they wanted to be known, they issued no statement. They engaged in no political activity. They were involved in no mobilization of opinion. They in no way had been identified with any religious or political activism. The families were completely unaware of any such, as were their closest friends and work associates. In fact, what they've now maintained is that the ID and the documentation pertaining to these young men, which was found at the bomb sites, is very clearly stuff that was planted, stuff that was orchestrated, materials that we've seen frequently with scapegoating operations.
Ralph, soon they said that three of the suspects traveled to Pakistan in 2004 seeking Islamic education. That Khan and Tanweer had traveled to Karachi on November 19th, and that they returned to Great Britain on February 8th, and that Hussein had traveled to the country in July of 2004. What's very interesting is that in Pakistan, the two madrasas where the young men supposedly went, the Jais-e-Mohammed and the Lashkar-e-Taiba madrasas, have both denied ever having these students. Now, Jais, according to reports by the Mail and Guardian in Great Britain, is in the eastern city of Lahore. And the British press reports had said that Tanweer had studied there. Quote, "We have no knowledge that anyone with the name of Shahzad Tanweer was enrolled in our madrasa," said the leader, Pir Safifullah Khalid. "Our records do not confirm this name." This was said by Asadullah Farooq, who's the son of the madrasa leader, who is Pir Saifullah Khalid. "The allegation is baseless. We do not entertain foreign students. We only have Pakistani students." The Lashkar-e-Taiba, the other madrasa, also denied that Tanweer had visited a campus that was formerly linked to a group in Muradik near Lahore. We have checked our records. No one with this name and with British nationality has ever stayed there. We do not have a policy of carrying out suicide attacks on civilians," said a spokesman from that group. Lashkar-e-Taiba was blamed, according to the press, for sheltering Al-Qaeda fugitives who left Afghanistan, who actually fled from Afghanistan after the collapse of the Taliban regime, that is really after the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in 2001. Ralph?
Well, now, as we look at this again, personal documents of all these individuals were found at all four bomb scenes. And although the four attackers were supposed to have died, conveniently dead, the bombs themselves were on timers. Well, as we said a moment before, timers are incompatible with a suicide bombing. There's no reason to have timers and then to die in the course of the operation. No, it was four coincidental screw-ups by the terrorists, we're being told. They happened to use timers, and they were blown up the process, leaving their property conveniently at the site. The second man's property was found at the Aldgate blasts. The third man's property at both the Aldgas and Edgware Road blasts. This is property that has been located by the authorities, indeed planted by the authorities. And according to the CCTV, the closed circuit television footage, the men at the four were posing at the King's Cross station shortly before 8:30 a.m. on that morning, posing for a joint picture for the cameras, leaving property at the blast scenes as evidence for the authorities to locate, but no statement of intent, no indication of any interest in such activities, and the property in pristine condition. In pristine condition, bundles of clothing with names sewn on labels, clothing made of asbestos. What we're looking here is the paradigm of a false flag patsy operation framing the intended victims. Look, the British press has come to much the same conclusion. The London Mirror, with a front page headline story, the London Mirror declares, what suicide bombers? And the rationale for the London Mirror's response was, there is no evidence of this. Why did they buy return train tickets to Luton? Why did they pay and display tickets for cars? Why were there no usual shouts of Allah Akbar? Why were bombs in bags and not on their bodies if they were suicide bombers, writes Jeff Edwards in the London Daily Mirror. The London bombers may have been duped, is the first headline, first line of this story. And the London Mirror is not alone in drawing these conclusions. These devices were in large rucksacks, which could easily be dumped instead of being strapped to their bodies. They carry wallets containing driving license, bank cards, and other personal items. Suicide bombers strip themselves of identifying material. Yet, similar attacks against public transport at Madrid last year were carried out by presumptive terrorists who managed to escape and presumably planned to strike again, writes the London Mirror. So indeed, the British press, although not in lockstep, is raising the critical questions about the government frame-up.
Ralph, there is also the profile of the four supposed suicide bombers, the homegrown suicide bombers. And the wife, the partner of one of them, of Germaine Lindsay, Samantha Lewaith, who's 22 years old, she's the mother of his one-year-old son, and she's expecting her second baby within days. It's unlikely that somebody who's doing well in life and his wife is expecting a baby and who is content in his relationship is going to then off himself. Mohammed Sadiq Khan's wife, Hasina, is the mother of a 14-month-old daughter, and she, too, is pregnant. So here we have two of the supposed London bombers in stable relationships with all that they have to look forward to in the world, and their wives are pregnant, and they would be leaving them in a terrible situation of having to fend for themselves, and also with a society looking at their children and their companions as pariahs. So this is something to consider. The families, other members of the family. Now, Germaine Lindsay's partner, Samantha Lewaith, has come out and said that she does not believe that Germaine Lindsay was responsible for any of these attacks.
The London Sun carried the headline story. Show me the DNA. Show me the proof. He's never had any interest in politics. He's never been involved in religious activity. He's never ever spoken to me about such things. This is a complete lie, said the widow. The authorities are making this up. I want to see the DNA. I want to see the proof. There is none. They're slandering my husband.
Yet other families of the supposed London bombers have been buying in to the enormous pressure from the British government, from the police agencies, and from the press. Hussein's family told of their horror at the teenagers' involvement in the massacre. They issued a statement. We are devastated over the events of the past few days. Hasib was a loving and normal young man who gave us no concern, and we are having difficulty taking this in. Our thoughts were with all the bereaved families. We have to live with the loss of our son in these difficult circumstances. We had no knowledge of his activity, and had we done, we would have done everything in our power to stop him. We urge anyone with information to cooperate fully with the authorities. So here you have the family is unaware of any statements, any activities from their sons that would make him, turn him into a London bomber, somebody who is taking the lives of other people instead of being concerned with the lives of other people, as some of these youngsters were with being involved in community activity. Again, Jamal Lindsay's wife states of his work. Jamal had experience with his local council while at school, and he enjoyed that work. It included where he was filing and doing computer work and health and safety inspections, and he was featured in a storybook on the school's website.
There is no evidence that these young men had any involvement in these events. The bombs were made of high military-grade explosives. The bombs were so powerful that none of the dead were identified by the time of the weekend, their bodies completely disintegrated. Timers were used to detonate the bombs in the underground trains. The suspects were identified by the police as, quote, having, quote, clean skins, unquote, an interesting formulation by which these racist authorities meant they were white. They had clean skins, so they were white. The suspects are supposed to be Pakistani. The IDs were found at multiple explosion sites, and in fact, the documents belonging to one of these accused was found at two sites. It is all of the earmarks of the false flag operation of 9/11, when the Arabic flight manual of Muhammad Atta was found in his car, and the passport of one of the presumptive hijackers is floating down from the destroyed steel and concrete reduced to dust in the World Trade Center. The only footage of the four young men together is at King's Cross Station before the explosions, where they are completely relaxed and show no evidence of doing anything except traveling to London together. And indeed, the fact that they have return tickets, that they have booked their cars into a location where they're to pick them up, we are faced with the strange claim that these men, with new families whose wife was pregnant, carry bombs set on timers and then stand around waiting for them for them to explode. It is a paradigm of the false flag operation. Now, we reported last week the important story about the simultaneous terror drill being conducted in London by Visor Consultants, which is a highly government-compromised security apparatus whose director, Peter Power, is a former high official in Scotland Yard itself. Interviewed by BBC Five Television, Peter Power acknowledged and indeed elaborated upon the fact that at the precise location and at the precise time of the London bombings, 1,000 people involved with Visor Consultants are carrying out a terror exercise. So a little study was done by Infowars.com on July 13th on the probability of a drill and attack coinciding at the precise time and the precise location. The probability of a three-station terror hit coinciding with such an exercise is 1 in 850 quintillion. Not 850 trillion or quadrillion, but 1 in 850 quintillion. The probability of an exercise drill on the same three stations at the same hour is 1 chance in 546 quadrillion. The probability of the drill and terror attacks coinciding by coincidence or chance is 1 in 12 past 1 trillion. Let me explain. There's no way to express this mathematically except in numbers. It's not a trillion, quadrillion, quintillion, sextillion, septillion, octillion, nonillion. It's 12 units past a trillion. Try to understand, brothers and sisters, the absurdity of this. There are an estimated number of total grains of sand in the entire world, 7 quintillion. That's a fraction of the odds against the probability of a drill, exercise drill for a terror attack, taking place at the same moment in the precise same locations on that day in London. In its context, if we go to a beach or a desert or under the sea and pick a single grain of sand, what chance is there that we're going to the same part of the world by chance to pick up the same grain? Trillions of times more probable than the London drill coinciding exact place, exact time as the attacks in London. Well, this is what we call coincidence theory. Not only that, but Rudolf Giuliani, who is locating himself at the precise time, at the precise location of the Liverpool station bombing, it turns out that Mr. Giuliani happens to have a business association with Visor Consultants through a shared directorship in a Canadian corporation. Tell it to the Marines. Brothers and sisters, the British authorities have been changing their story almost every 24 hours. Initially, as you remember, they attributed these events in the London Underground to a power surge and electrical failure. It wasn't until the third blast that they acknowledged that there was anything other than a power surge that would be responsible. They gave plenty of time for the authorities to avoid any precipitous action in the London Underground. Then they put forward the story that they were explosives, but they were of a cheap pharmaceutical grade that could be obtained in any pharmacy. In order to reconcile their claims of a bombing attack by four young men from Yorkshire. Well, here's the London Independent on July 12th, and a story as well in Le Monde. The bombs used in Thursday's attacks were of military origin, according to a senior French policeman sent to London to help what was become the biggest criminal investigation in British history. Christopher Chaboud, head of the French Anti-Terrorism Coordination Unit, confirmed to Le Monde that the explosives used in these bombings were of sophisticated, restricted military origin, a fact that he described as very worrying. How did they get them? He asks. How indeed? How indeed? The London Underground exercises were not just exercises, as we learned. In the ITN TV interview, as well as the BBC radio interview, Peter Power of Visor Consultants makes clear that his team of so-called crisis managers were overseeing a terror drill for bombings in the underground, an exercise occurring at the exact time and in precise locations where the actual real-time event was unfolding, stated the following interesting remark. We had to switch suddenly from an exercise to real control. The company the advisor was running was answering to authorities that I cannot name, but they are listening and they know who they are, said Peter Power. What signal is he sending here? He's sending the following message very clearly. Don't take us out because we'll name you. There's no reason on BBC to say we're doing this for unnamed authorities, but they're listening and they know who they are. On BBC, he's sending them a message. Yes, we're involved in these operations. Don't hang us out to dry. That is very clear. But what becomes even more clear as we examine this with any care is that these developments in the London Underground exercise story are very damaging to the authorities, because Visor Consultants and Mr. Power are not only linked to the counterterrorism operations of the British, but they are also associated with operations of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Quantico, Virginia, which have a very instructive character. The operations in Quantico involve rehearsal of terror attacks in which they recruit people to act and pose as terrorists. They actually were recruiting and, in fact, hiring people of Arab origin, Islamic individuals from the Middle East or from Pakistan to act out scenarios run by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And these have been occurring on a regularized, highly controlled basis. Open call for FBI players. Terrorists and murderers are the roles cast in Quantico training, July 13th. Two men of dark complexions of Middle Eastern descent are discussing a terrorist attack, the blowing up and bombing of a Chicago train station, conversing in Arabic. The swarthy duo speak excitedly about the Iraq war and the efforts of insurgents who attack U.S. military personnel. One of the men notes, it is our responsibility to shed blood for Allah. This is one of a dozen training operatives at the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia. They are future G-men participating in role player exercise, preparing them for real life situations. This glimpse into the Academy's secret training playbook is found in a request for quote issued last month by the FBI. The Bureau is securing bids from firms who will provide quote at least 60 role players to staff these training scenarios for a period of 12 months and for 4 option years. The role players will perform as terrorists and murderers and as participants in terror events.
Ralph, it's interesting to look at one of the scenarios, CLIN-20 scenario OSUP-6. The practical exercise begins with the NATs, that's the trainers, the FBI trainers, prepare to arrest Ali al-Hashimi and search his rented room located within Hogan's Alley. Prior to the entry into the residence, they may determine that an apartment manager is available. If so, a role player portraying the apartment manager shall be provided for this interview. If the NATs do not inquire about an apartment manager, the apartment manager shall present himself during the course of the search and demand an explanation. What's interesting here is how they so carefully orchestrate what is going to take place. Akeem Nasir shall appear at the search site. Nasir will be curious about what is going on and, when approached by the NATs, shall explain that he is looking for al-Hashimi, as al-Hashimi owes him money. Nasir is a Muslim who disagrees with the more radical view of Islam, one that is held by al-Hashimi and his friends. Nasir is supportive of the United States. During the interview, Nasir, the NATs, will persuade Nasir to assist them in locating al-Hashimi, and Nasir will wear a recording device and a transmitter when he meets with the associates, who are Malik Raza and Hanif Amir, and they're going to meet at Raza's residence. And it goes on with the script and the questioning and what they discover. The information in the RFP says that 3 males of Middle Eastern race, they call it a race, age 25 and plus, will be necessary. And they're portraying Akeem Nasir. And then also they want another 3 men to portray Malik Raza, and another 3 to portray Salim Ahmed. And what's also noticed is that these role players will be handling weapons, and supposedly they're non-functioning firearms, and they're constructed of either plastic or they can be, according to this, actual firearms that they say would be rendered inoperable. Or there are blue-handled weapons that are firearms that have been modified to fire a blank round. That is, they say, supposedly, a blank round. And orange handle weapons, which are firearms that have been modified to fire a simulation rounds. And a simulation round is a projectile that consists of a soap-based round called a pip, and it leaves a colorful marking. So you can see how in these exercises you can have people who think they have a job, that they're in a role-playing exercise or they're part of an exercise. They're given weapons. They're given all these materials. But who is to say that these are non-functioning firearms or that they've been modified to handle to fire a blank round? Ralph?
Yes. Now, the revelation here about the FBI operation at Quantico on July 13th, where at the same time they are training terror, so-called terrorists, in mock terror exercises.
They're training agents.
Agents, yes. The interview by Peter Power of Visa Consultants, who was carrying out exactly such an FBI-like operation in the underground in London at the exact locations as of the terror bombings, the impossibility of which, on the basis of probability calculations we've already cited in this program, Power stated this exercise program was part of a much wider project, and it broadens the scope of what we are doing. Anyone with no knowledge about these ongoing operations should be careful. Well, what is Mr. Power talking about here? Not only does he acknowledge that this terror exercise is occurring, but it's, quote, part of a wider project which broadens the scope. And furthermore, he acknowledges that in the course of this terror exercise, they went over from terror to on-hand management of the actual bombings themselves. The on-hand management.
Now, the bombing sites.
At the bombing site, but the, right. Yes, but of course the implication that we are making is very clear. What we are suggesting here on the basis of the increasing and overwhelming evidence that's unfolding is that as in Quantico and now in London, we are engaged in a U.S. and British intelligence false flag operation, and I will make an analogy. In 1993 at the World Trade Center, the FBI high-level operative Imad Ali Salem, an Egyptian intelligence agent, approached the mosque of the Blind Cleric in New Jersey and recruited young men and to engage them in coming to the World Trade Center on a need-to-know basis. He provided explosives. He provided the safe house. He, with Guzi Hadass of the Mossad, arranged the Ryder rental van. He wore a wire and made transcripts of every meeting he had with these hapless young men who were not even aware of the purpose of their nominal operation. When the World Trade Center was blown up and Imad Ali Salem was arrested, he made the following statement. I was assured by the FBI that the explosives that I was provided would not detonate. The cover story that Imad Ali Salem offered on his own behalf is that it was only an exercise. It was, in fact, a provocation. It was a staged operation of the Federal Bureau of Investigation itself, much as they are doing today in Quantico. Much as Peter Power has acknowledged, Visor consultants were unfolding in London. Mr. Giuliani's presence at the Liverpool station, given his involvement in the events of 9/11 and his association with Visor consultants through the shared corporate directorship of a common purpose Canadian company, begins to outline the architecture of the real dynamics and the hand of the state in the events of London.
Well, Ralph, let's look at some of the stories that have been emerging. As we mentioned earlier, at first they said it was a power surge, and soon thereafter they said that these were military explosives that were involved in the London bombing. But now they've come up with a new story saying that these are homemade bombs and that these are bombs that the materials of which could be found in a pharmacy. And they can't get the story to straight.
Well, they can get it straight, Maya, but every time they surface a particular line of evidentiary argument, such as military origin, they get themselves in trouble because it points to themselves. And they provide it's just like the Kennedy assassination, a series of official fictions, each of which is incompatible with its antecedents.
So the Evening News in Great Britain on July 15th, the headline was, London bombs homemade from pharmacy ingredients. Explosive found by detectives investigating the London bombings were homemade using ingredients that can be found at the chemists, that's what they call the pharmacies in Great Britain. The highly volatile explosive acetone peroxide was discovered in a house, conveniently in a house in Leeds, that was thought to be a bomb-making factory, reads the article. Instructions for making acetone peroxide are readily available on the internet, and the police started hunting for an Egyptian chemistry student who they said fled his home in Leeds. In other words, he wasn't at home and it turns out he wasn't home 4 weeks before, as the suspected mastermind behind the suicide attacks. In fact, he was arrested in Egypt, was interviewed by British intelligence, and they definitely say, they are releasing that he doesn't know anything about what is going on. But early on, they were blaming al-Nasir for being the mastermind and the bomb maker. What resulted then when people started investigating acetone peroxide, and as it says here, it's a highly volatile explosive, it's not the type of explosive that you would put in a rucksack to take on a plane, on a train, or carry in a car. People who are inexperienced with explosives, because as they said, it's highly volatile. It would be easy for these people to blow themselves up at an inappropriate moment. Ralph?
Yes, Maya, but as we see, the nature of the explosives has been clearly identified by the French counterintelligence chief as military in origin, which is the exact information that came out initially with the London police investigation, which they then quickly dropped.
Ralph? I just want to say one thing about the home, the so-called homemade bombs, because what has really been happening and what is underlying all of this is the move to deepen the anti-terrorism laws in Great Britain and in the United States. And the new laws that they're proposing for Great Britain, which were to be discussed at the end of the year, and now Tony Blair is going to quicken the pace and put them before Parliament much sooner, they include new offenses, one of indirect incitement, which means that the mullahs, the religious leaders of the Islamic faith, can be put into prison, can be arrested because of what is called indirect incitement. And the other part of the new anti-terrorism law would be for, quote, acts preparatory to terrorism.
It goes beyond that.
And that would include, they say, buying bomb-making materials. Well, if you consider that acetone, which is a household cleanser, is considered one of these bomb-making materials, or if you remember the Ricine Terra plot, where the pips, that is, the seeds of apples, are considered bomb poison materials, then anyone who is bringing home apples and anyone who uses acetone is considered to be buying bomb-making materials. Ralph?
At the same time that they're pushing through these proto-fascist martial law-like regulations in London, they've announced that the London police will function as snipers and will shoot dead anybody they suspect of being involved in these events if they believe that they may be carrying a bomb on them. So now we have it. They approach some youngster who is of Pakistani origin or who's walking out of a mosque, and they shoot him dead, and they then say that that he was about to detonate a bomb. They are authorized to shoot to kill, not to arrest, let alone to grant the presumption of innocence or to entitle one to due process or to have a lawyer present or any of those sloppy and messy things associated with a free and democratic society. No, we now have the sniper state, emulating the Israeli operations in which suspects can be shot by snipers at long distance.
And, Ralph, the wording in a Boston Herald article by Jose Martinez, Wednesday, July 13th, is revealing, and it reminds one of the drug raids that the SWAT squads conduct here in the United States, in ghettos of cities throughout the United States. Quote, British soldiers blasted their way into what turned out to be an unoccupied row house, and authorities executed search warrants on five other homes in the area in search of computer files and explosives. One of the bomber's relatives was arrested. Notice they're already calling them the bombers, according to the British news agency Press Association. The word I wanted to focus on here is how the press is showing that the British soldiers blasted their way into the homes, and they were doing this throughout various Pakistani residents, and these are citizens of Great Britain, and it's not just people who immigrated from Pakistan. These are people who have lived in the United Kingdom through generations. Ralph?
Maya, Reuters and Agence France-Presse ran a story on July 14th. Plot to scar London with burning cross. London's four suicide bombers wanted to scar the city with a burning cross of blasts in its north, south, east, and west, in the hope of being declared Islamic martyrs, the newspaper has claimed. What is the origin of the burning cross hypothesis and the Islamic martyrs? Investigators developed the burning cross theory based upon the internet statement by the shadowy group which calls itself the Organization of Al-Qaeda Jihad in Europe, which has taken responsibility for the blasts. Now, that's very instructive. Implicating these four young men, the hypothesis of a burning cross of blasts, the claim that they are suicide bombers, is attached to Organization of Al-Qaeda Jihad in Europe, which has already been exposed as a fabricated organization whose quotations from the Quran were faulty, and who has been tracked to another website called Al-Nada, which has its origins in Maryland and in Texas. Well, brothers and sisters, it becomes even more interesting than that. One of the servers for the website associated with Al-Qaeda in Europe has an association with the sister-in-law of George W. Bush, Sharon Bush. I guess what we found here is that the mastermind of the London bombers is the Bush family itself, based upon this reasoning. The evidence that they present for Al-Qaeda in Europe leads us where? To Maryland, to Texas, and to the Bush family itself. Highly instructive. And here's the Jerusalem Post on July 7th. Ephraim Haley, the ex-Mossad chief, the former director of the Israeli Mossad, runs an article in which he talks about the necessity for a world war against terror, but it's very interesting about what he says. He says, does Mr. Halevi, that there was careful planning, intelligence gathering, a sophisticated choice of timing, and near-perfect execution. Indeed, he says, the bombs were not only exploded in near-perfect execution, but, he states, in virtual simultaneous explosion. That's on July 7th. Now, this is unfortunate for the ex-Mossad chief because he reveals too much knowledge too soon. He's disclosing this moments after the attacks in London, when the British authorities themselves are maintaining that they are due to a power surge, and when after the third explosion they are stating that those explosions occurred in sequence. Only later would they adopt the story that they were simultaneous bombs with operational capacity of considerable scope. Ephraim Haley, the ex-Mossad chief, knows too much and knows it too soon.
There's an interesting article that appeared at DEPCA, that's www.depca.com. This is the it's a conduit for the approach of the Mossad.
Well, DEPCA is the intelligence communication apparatus of the Israeli Mossad.
And it's entitled London Terror Inquiry Heads Secretly to the African Sahara. And what DEPCA is saying is that the intelligence that a British authority is releasing to the public, which emphasizes Pakistan and Egypt as the center of their investigation, is actually a diversionary tactic. And that, in fact, the
diversionary tactic by the British authorities.
That's right, because the real location for the moving forward the war on terror is taking place in the Sahara, and they blame the blue-faced men of the Sahara, who are Berbers. They are nomads who move throughout the Sahara Desert, and actually on Wednesday, July 13th, in one of the most out-of-the-way towns in the world, according to DEPCA, which is
Nouakchott,
the capital of Mauritania, there was a meeting that was attended by the linchpin of the services responsible for the war on Al-Qaeda. That is the U.S. CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, the British Domestic and Foreign Secret Services, that's MI5 and MI6, and the security chiefs of Algeria, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger. You notice there that the Egyptian and the Pakistani intelligence chiefs are not included. A senior British official who specializes in intelligence and terrorism, Kim Howells, was dispatched to Morocco. And DEPCA maintains you know, before the British were maintaining that the explosives were homegrown, came from the pharmacies. And Debke has insisted that the explosives that were used in the London bombing actually came from the Balkans, from Serbia. And that these are...
By way of North Africa.
By way of North
Africa. What's interesting about this, and I think, and Maya came upon this, it's your own research work that turned this up. I think this is a very linchpin piece of documentation. In Nouakchott in Mauritania, in the land of the Tuareg, is the highest level security conference with the CIA and the Mossad and the British intelligence and all the counter-terrorism units meeting in Nouakchott in Mauritania, where they are preparing the war on counter-terror, where they are in fact orchestrating the terror apparatus, which is the false flag apparatus with that they unfold from New York to London to Madrid. And here is a further document of yesterday's date, July 18, 2005. Mossad chief confirms Netanyahu's warning regarding London bombing. You may remember, brothers and sisters, that Finance Minister Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, former Prime Minister of England, he was supposed to be attending a conference in a hotel at the exact time of the bombing, right over the Liverpool station, the site of the first bombing, but he got a heads up. The Israelis, when that heads up and that foreknowledge became known, insisted that it was Scotland Yard who had that information days before. Scotland Yard insisted it was the Israelis who had the heads up. Well, here is former Mossad chief Meir Dagan in the German newspaper Bild am Sonntag in yesterday's newspaper. The Mossad office in London received advance notice about these attacks, confirming the earlier Associated Press report. The Mossad received advance notice about these attacks. It's confirmed by Maya Dagan, the former head of the Mossad itself, and disclosed in the London press. What we're dealing with, brothers and sisters, with this tragic event and with the framing of these four innocent young men, undoubtedly they were recruited or hoodwinked into participating in an exercise in the London station. One of the revelations of the French Interior Minister is that these four young men had been detained by the police approximately a year before. The British were furious with the French Interior Ministry for disclosing this. They detained them, but they didn't charge them. What were they doing with them? Were they recruiting them to participate in a terror exercise? Were they fingering them for the patsies yet to come? The London bombings are a false flag operation. Inventing the scapegoats is the part, this is the second part of this ongoing examination of the hands of intelligence in the operations of London as in Madrid and 9/11 itself. Support WBAI, brothers and sisters. Become members. Support the continued programming of Taking Aim. Expose the terror state which menaces us all.
Tatan ta chinda karo tatan ta bilo nokmi